Welcome to the Focus Forward Business Podcast for studymckee.com.
Hey, welcome everybody to the Focus Forward Business Podcast. I'm Sturdy McKee, your host, and with me today is Chris Felton. Chris is a financial services entrepreneur for the past 20 plus years, and in his company, he is known as the Mindset Guy. He's also the author of Think and Grow You, which we're going to dive into a little bit. And in this episode, we're going to talk about when you get stuck, especially around finances and money, how to get out. So, and Chris lives near Denver, Colorado. Thanks, Chris, for being on the show.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So let's start with you just sharing a little bit more about who you are and what you're passionate about.
Yeah. So 52 years old, been an entrepreneur.
You don't have to give your age, man.
Yeah. Been an entrepreneur for the last 24 years and have built a business that's helped a lot of people around this topic of money, because it's definitely one that people really struggle with. We are best able to teach things we once had problems with, right? So I understand that struggle, and married, 22-year-old, 19-year-old, two boys, and just looking to help and just help people get really unstuck. I mean, that's the thing. I feel that people are really more stuck than ever. And the reason I wrote the book, the reason I do what I do, is to get people from that stuck state and get them back on the path to the life that they deserve. So.
Well, you just mentioned that people struggle with money, and that's, I mean, we all have, or at least a lot of us at different points. Why is that? Why do we struggle with money?
I mean, there's definitely not a lack of information out there. If you Google the word money, you're going to get a lot of stuff. It's, it's the second most mentioned topic in the Bible. And you know, people struggle with it. You know, I did, I mean, I was, you know, my background is a financial advisor, CPA. 2007, 2008, 2009, I was, $250,000 in credit card debt. I'm in the middle of the Great Recession, and I'm leaking negative cash flow about $3,000 to $4,000 a month. So I knew what to do, but I wasn't doing it. And that's, the challenge in life is closing the gap between what we know to do and what we actually do. And that gap is really tied into your beliefs around money. And unfortunately, we get programmed at a very young age, and we can do deep dives into that, around money. And then we get programmed by society around money. And so those two forces are usually working against us. Because, my parents said rich people are crooks. They make money on the backs of poor people. My mom was like, either, money, you either have it or you don't. So my programming was pretty negative. And there's a lady named Margaret Lynch that wrote a book called Tapping into Wealth. And in her studies, she said the biggest determining factor of your financial success is the vows that you made to gain acceptance into your family at a young age. Meaning, the vows you made to gain acceptance into your family at a young age. So to get their acceptance, I had to buy their BS. So my parents had bad money beliefs. I said, yep, to get your love and acceptance, I'll take on your crap. And then, television villainizes wealth. I mean, I'm older, dating myself here, but do you remember Gilligan's Island?
Oh, sure. Right? Sure, yeah. Sure.
So Thurston Howell and his wife were wealthy. Mm-hmm. What did they portray? Aloofness,
incompetence,
don't care, incompetence. Like they didn't even really know they were shipwrecked. Right. So who wants to be that? The movie The Titanic is probably one of the worst movies ever on the planet to villainize wealthy people, right? The wealthy people were upstairs, hating each other, miserable, dressed well, unhappy down below. All the broke people were, drinking, dancing on tables, having the time of their lives. In Spider-Man, the Green Goblin's a billionaire. So that, those beliefs at a young age combined with how society villainizes wealth creates really horrific belief systems for most people. I was one of them. And it just does not line up with someone being wealthy. 90% of lottery winners are dead broke in jail inside of 10 years. And people are like, they're stupid. Right. No, they're not stupid. Their belief systems do not line up with maintaining wealth. So anyway, I hit you with a lot there, but that's,
well,
that's
no,
the
reason. I love it. There are a couple of things I want to delve into there. The first is, you're talking about belief systems, but I think the next step in that stage is our emotions around it, and our emotions when we're dealing with conflicting beliefs or conflicting information and that type of thing. And can you talk a little bit about that? We're going to get into why you wrote the book and kind of that story in a few minutes, but what emotions were you going through? What kind of conflict was generated between like the information that you're seeing, like the objective reality versus the belief systems and stuff that you were taking on early on in your life?
I mean, every emotion, as you know, it falls into two buckets, love or fear. Basically, every emotion on the planet is either love or fear. And so most people have a fear-based belief, fear as an emotion around money. And, so there's always like, when's the shoe going to drop? Right. Mm. I mean, that's a belief system. Things are going great, but they can't last forever. Fear, right? So, I always talk about it. You're going to search for evidence that it's either going to work or not based on your belief systems and your identity. And one of my big messages always is like, you don't get what you hope for, you get what you expect. So people hope for financial success, but they don't really expect it. And so I had fear of loss, right? Mm-hmm. So I had fear of loss and losing what I had. And so I was attached to it. My focus was on losing, and therefore you get what you focus on, right? The law of growth is the preeminent law in personal growth and development. Everything it's ever taught is basically to dial you into what you focus on expands. So I was getting what I was expecting, losing. I was getting what I was expecting. The first marriage, I expected it to fail. I was hoping it would go great, but I expected it to fail. So, and those, all that stuff is, it's just fear-based emotion. I don't know if that answered your question or not, but that was it.
Yeah.
It was fear of loss, fear of failure, fear of all those things. And that's what got me stuck. And me continuing to focus on losing in my environment kept me in this negative feedback loop that was, pretty nasty for a number of years.
Well, that's, so when you're skiing, snowboarding, driving on the track, all these other things, right? You go where your eyes are. I mean, they teach you that, right? So that same idea, if you're expecting and kind of focused on these things, following that, and that's where you end up, that it is where you end up, right? So that's a great lesson right there. How did you break, you're talking about the fear versus love. I think emotions are a little bit more complicated than the binary, but that's another discussion for another time. But you mentioned the vows you made to gain acceptance into your family at a young age, right? How did you end up kind of dealing with that and breaking from that?
Well, I mean, it was, the bottoming out was, I'm in all this debt. My second current and last wife, Marlo, walked into a financial crap show that she didn't know existed because I I fooled her. I mean, I sold her.
Right, you don't
on,
tell people about that stuff.
Yeah.
We're all afraid
well,
of
yeah.
what happens.
Yeah. And, it, you know, and I'm not an idiot. I mean, I'm a CPA. I'm a financial guy. I'm an entrepreneur. I had some success. It's not like, you know, I was a failure. I could, you know, get clients. I could drive the revenue of my business, but I had a horrible relationship with money, and money's a relationship. And you know how functional it is based on what's going on with it. And so, you know, she walked into it and she didn't know. And then, you know, then finally I had to let her know, because I was meditating one day trying to figure out what I was going to do. And, you know, the message from God was like, you got to let her do it. That was the message I got. Single greatest business, single greatest financial decision I made was to take action on that intuition and turn over the finances of our house and our business over to her. Because, and so, you know, that was an intuitive insight that I moved on, that my ego had been fighting forever because I didn't want her to know. Plus, I'm a CPA and a financial advisor, and she was a hairstylist. So shouldn't I know more than her? Well,
but you brought up a great point there. Knowing what to do, knowing something is not the same as doing it. And, you know, we see this all around us and we're all guilty of it. You know, I mean, my background's in physical therapy and, you know, I know how to train. I have had a CSCS at one point, certified strength and conditioning specialist certification, right? You know what to do, but if you don't go and do it, if you don't go to the gym, if you don't go outside and work out, if you don't do the exercises, it doesn't matter. You know, we know how to eat, right? We know how to eat healthy. Do we do it? You know, it's where the rubber meets the road. So the knowing and doing are two entirely different things. And, you know, maybe, and let's go back, because a lot of the folks listening to this are going to relate to what you just said as well. I know how to make money, right? They can ramp up their business, they can generate more revenue, and yet they still don't have any more of it at the end of the day, right? Or the end of the year or whatever. And that knowing doing gap, how do you start to bridge that other than delegation, right? That's a brilliant thing, by the way, but you know, into somebody you can trust. But then how do you overcome that knowing doing gap? What did you do?
Yeah. So leading to kind of the bottoming out that I'll get into kind of what I did. Right. But so I handed the reins over to her, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, she like stalks me in the kitchen and she's like, what the freak did you do? Like, what, how? And then we sat down and we had the come to Marlow meeting, which was, you know, which is awesome. And she introduced a four-letter word called a budget, and you know,
right.
but this is going to some of the stuff that you're asking. I didn't want to look at it. And one of my favorite quotes is optimism and delusion sleep in the same bed together. And entrepreneurs can be very optimistic.
Are eternally optimistic, right?
Yeah, they're just like, and she's like, well, this sucks. Like, we got, and I'm like, no, don't look there. Look over here, because I got this client that's going to change everything. And so it's not like I was sitting around like crying. I was still taking action, but I was totally delusional. And my mentor that helped me, you talked about objective reality. You just brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Siebold was my book coach, and he's got the longest running study of self-made millionaires and billionaires on the planet. He's interviewed over 1,300 over the last 35 years. And in his book, it's called 177 Mental Toughness Secrets of the World Class. Number one of the 177 is objective reality. And it's the capacity to look at your results and own them without feeling bad about yourself. And the masses have a challenge with doing that. They don't want to look at their results because they don't want to feel bad about themselves. Well, if you don't look at it, the ostrich approach doesn't work. That's what I was doing. So fast forward from that meeting, I still don't understand budgets. I still don't understand anything. And then we had to get rid of that house. We had to go rent. Mm-hmm. And so 6 months later, I had to approach my wife at home and ask her to help me because I had to pay my ex-wife the next day $5,200 in alimony and child support. And I didn't have it. Mm-hmm. So I had to convince her to use her savings.
Oh, geez.
To pay my ex-wife. So we call it the purse throwing incident, my friend. And shit hit the fan because she threw her purse at me and then picked it up and threw it again and then picked it up and threw it again. Her hand-eye coordination is horrific. So I was never in any real danger. But we were just having the fight of our lives. And then I said, well, why are we still married? And she went upstairs for the rest of the night to figure that out. And that moment woke me up out of this hypnotic trance that I was in, this hypnotic state that us humans live in. And I could see that all the problems in my life, I was there. I was the common denominator of the whole show. And so that was the moment I'm like, dude, you either need to own this 100% or it's never going to change. It's not your ex-wife's fault. It's not your wife's fault. It's not the economy's fault. It's not you're the cause. And it freed me up. And then the next day, my wife and I got together, and to her immense credit, because none of this happens without her, she's like, nope, not getting divorced. Nope, not declaring bankruptcy. Nope. We're going to figure it out. And so then she got on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles for the next 2 years. We had a couple of things working for us. One, we had access to wealthy mentors. And she went and interviewed them. And she came back and she's like, this is what they do. And then she was like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm going to figure out how I keep creating broke. And she's like, well, how are you going to do that? I'm like, I'm going to figure out every thought and I'm going to change. And I'm not interested in changing. I'm committed. And she was like, what's the difference? I'm like, most people are interested.
Right.
And one of the most ridiculous things in society today is the belief that you can get something for nothing. And
of course, yeah.
Yeah. So interested people, they'll hit roadblocks and then they'll pick up, they'll take a chicken exit and move on down the road. I'm like, I'm committed. She's like, what does that mean? I'm like, you know how an Olympic athlete treats their sport? That's me. I'm going to figure this out. And so, dude, I was up 4:30. I'm not saying people need to do this, but I had to change my life. My back was against the wall. I was up early, journaling, visualizing, imaging, getting coaching, and I had to remake my golf swing around money. And I had to pull out every freaking belief, put it under a microscope, call BS on most of it, and do whatever I had to do to shift. And what happened was, you know, we took our income up over seven figures. We eliminated the debt, you know, became financially independent, became, you know, we just had some really amazing freaking blessings. But not only did I have a financial transformation, I had a spiritual transformation, a health transformation. I got better energy at 52 than I ever did at 42. Everything changed. But it was when I owned it, took 100% responsibility, was committed to it, and then did what I could do every single day to change my life.
Well, that right there. Okay. That right there. People talk about habits and talk about all this other stuff that tends to be kind of abstract, but you just mentioned what I did every single day. So if there's one takeaway from what we're talking about today, for those folks who are listening, that is one of the most powerful tools you can do. I have literally on my calendar the three things. The three things will change periodically depending upon what my current priorities and goals are, right? But I got three things I work on every single day, you know, and would do something. And that's one of those things that if you do something to move the ball forward instead of putting it off until the due date or whatever, you will make amazing progress. It's the idea of Kaizen. It's the 1% changes, you know, over time, those snowball, right? So what, I mean, share with us, Chris, just a little bit about maybe one of the things that you started to do that was different.
Well, the first thing is my wife and I had to sit down and we had to answer the question, what do we really want? And that's probably
so identifying the goals to know what to do.
Yeah. And that's like the most beat up topic in the world of personal growth and development. But most people hear that and they're like, oh, yeah, I got to know what I want. And then they see a squirrel run past them and then they're like, oh, wait, let me go catch this. I got to go catch that squirrel.
Right.
And then I'm going to come back. Nope. This was us sitting our asses down and doing the hardest work on the planet, which is thinking. And so we sat down and I'm like, what do you want? She's like, I want $100,000 saved. I'm like, I'm like, we got nothing. I mean, you might as well have asked me to climb Everest right there.
Right. We're in the hole.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that my mentor, Steve Siebold, figured out is the masses think goal setting's logical and the world class knows that goal setting's emotional.
Absolutely.
And almost nobody knows that. And so my left brain CPA set a goal, goody spreadsheets, like, let's go.
Yeah, that's not how it works.
And this time I knew I had to do it differently. And so we sat there for probably an hour and a half. Why? And she's like, the physical stress, the stress from the financial, I mean, it was impacting her. Like, it's just not good. Like, women like to have security around money, right? Guys like to go out. I mean, we all like to have security, but caveman, cavewoman, security, men have to produce. So I felt safety in producing, but I wasn't providing any security for her. And so she needed to feel secure. Right. So that my kids were little. I'm in Colorado. They're in Atlanta. I hadn't seen them in 6 months. I'm like, I got to figure that out. I got to see my kids. I got to have a relationship with them. I need to be a better example. And then I think the best thing we did is we identified the feeling we wanted to have. And everything we do in life, we're hoping to obtain a feeling. And the feeling was relief. Relief is very powerful. So everything I did, imaging, visualization, thoughts, whatever, the stuff I share in my book, it was all about getting that feeling of relief. So once we did that, then it was like, okay, now, right, if you have a Lamborghini, it's great. The vehicle's awesome. But if the vehicle has no gas in the tank, it's worthless. Well, now we just filled up the gas tank with our reasons. Then it was all about execution. So then it was like, okay, 100,000 is Mount Everest. It seems totally freaking impossible, but we could get to base camp one. What's base camp one? Base camp one, first 10 grand saved. That first 10,000 was the hardest, right? And then we got focused on that. And then a lot of stuff I share in the book is like, okay, we dialed it in. Okay. We dialed things into quarters and all that. And then we set a weekly meeting Saturday at 4 o'clock. And it was like, did we move closer? Did we not? What needed to change? Small course corrections. And we as a couple set a unifying goal for the first time in our lives. And that was the single greatest goal we've ever set. And anyway, we obviously at one point just blew past it. Lots of cool things happen, but we created that momentum. And so anyway, so that's the stuff. It was the clarity of what we wanted, but it was the emotional juice behind it that really made the difference. And because of that, dude, you could not get me to blow a dollar on anything that wasn't going to move us closer to hitting that goal.
So the other thing you just said there too, that I want to call out, because I'm a big advocate for operationalizing these ideas, right? Because we have a lot of ideas, again, the knowing doing gap, the weekly meetings, the frequency of your assessment and course corrections, right? Whether that's individually debriefing or with somebody else or what have you, that feedback loop and the small course corrections. I mean, again, I like my driving analogies. If you're on the track or if you're on the highway, let's say, and you look down for 3 seconds and you look back up, there are times when you have to make big course corrections, and big course corrections at speed are not good, right? I mean, you want to make small inputs along the way. Smooth, they say on the track, smooth is fast, right? So small corrections, small movements, small inputs, you don't unsettle the car. I just love the analogies because it's so applicable here. But if you're not doing it frequently enough, then your course corrections are going to have to be much, much larger. So I love that piece of it, Chris. I think that's a huge tool that people can take away and actually start to use, like immediately do an assessment and then, you know, schedule your check-ins on it. So go back, you've covered a bunch of stuff here, but you know, you wrote the book Think and Grow You. Why? What motivated you? Because I mean, I know how big a lift, how much work it is to write a book and get it published and all that stuff. What drove you to do that? And also then why did you stick with it? Because there are a lot of people who've started a book and are working on a book, right? And it's 3 years down the road and they haven't finished or published the book. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, when I turned 50, I was kind of depressed for a couple days, right? Because I realized for the first time in my life, I wasn't getting out of this thing alive, which is kind of funny. It was really the first time I connected with my mortality. And then one of my chapters in the book is called You're Too Young to Be Old. And so I have an angel in my business that just like sends me stuff when I need it, and it's basically what I cover in that book is your most productive time in your life is actually 60 to 70, and your second most productive 70 to 80, and your third most is 50 to 60. So I kind of have a really cool story in that as well. So I got that and I'm like, holy crap, I feel great. I'm at my best. What do I want? And the word that kind of got downloaded to me was impact. And then about 90 days after that, a good friend of mine in the company, same age, healthy, stroke, dead in 7 days. And we weren't like super close, but our proximity of age and just there's so right. many similarities in our lives. And dude, it really did a number on me. And then Steve Siebold called me and he's like, dude, like he literally called me like a day after it all went down. He's like, I've heard you speak forever, man. Like, dude, you got to write a book and I'm going to help you. And so, you know, Steve sold, I don't know, 4.5 million books, made over 50 million in speaking fees. I mean, he's a legend. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'll coach you, but we got to bleed this thing out. And it's probably going to take us 12 to 18 months to do something really good. So we went through that process, but the reason I wrote the book is, I know what it's like to be stuck. And I know what it's like to live in fear, doubt, and worry. I also know what it feels like when you feel like you're doing everything possible and nothing changes. And it's really frustrating. And having coached thousands of people over the last 24 years, it's painful as a coach to watch people quit on their goals, dreams, and aspirations because they get so stuck. And I can empathize with that because I almost did that. But instead of doing that, I went all in on changing. And so I wrote it because, you know, I'm hoping, you know, and I invested tens of thousands of dollars in personal growth and development, I invested thousands of hours. And so my goal is I hope people can invest, you know, whatever the book costs is $20 or whatever, and learn the lessons of the book, and get better results. And it's written in a very simple format where it's 200 to 300 words of just teaching on a topic. It's a quote, a resource that I used, book, podcast, technology I used to change, and then there's an action step. And a lot of the action steps are journaling. What's the next step? This next step. And then it's my it's my personal story that's 400 to 600 words behind it that kind of take people through my journey on all sorts of topics. But it's basically, the formula is, I was a dumbass. I woke up to being a
dumbass.
You don't
have to be.
Yeah. I woke up to being a dumbass. Here's what I did to change. And then here's the result I got. And so there's 50 concepts. People can read a concept in 2.5 to 3 minutes and apply. Or, you know, I used books, a lot of them, to get unstuck. Right. So my goal is, this will be an ongoing resource for people. They can literally scan the chapter and go, huh, I'm stuck on forgiveness. I'm stuck on judgment. I'm stuck on being an approval addict. I'm stuck on worrying. Let me read that again. What did Chris do? Okay, here's the action step. And then hopefully they can instantaneously shift and get back on the path that they deserve to be on.
Well, I mean, you just said that, you know, I was a dumbass. I want to be careful for folks, because there's a fine line between taking ownership and then kind of self-blaming. I mean, we can accept blame for some of our actions, right, for how we took it on. But did you get stuck around that at any point?
No,
I've seen people do that.
I'm just joking on that. I mean, one of my chapters on that is stop beating yourself up. So people can refer to that chapter, but I was just joking on that. But
I get that. But part of the reason it's funny, part of the reason there's humor there is there's some truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So, So the blame thing, it is easy, I think, to get stuck there also.
My whole thing is really just, you know, your ego's not your amigo, and it's really your ego's not your amigo. Yeah. It's really about understanding, you know, these habitual patterns that keep us stuck. And one is, you know, I didn't like get into blame or beating myself up. I've always been pretty clear of that one, but I know that runs a lot of people. So, yeah. That's why I included that chapter. I call it whatever form of resistance you have, right? And resistance is what is happening should not be happening. So some people go into blaming, I'm a loser, you know, all that negative self-talk.
And avoidance or whatever, yeah, right?
Mine was delusion. So I was just like, you're awesome. It's all good.
Everything's going to be great. Around.
Everything's going to be great. Everybody's happy. Right. Don't worry, be happy. It was all those. So whatever your form of resistance is, it's just understanding. That's why the objective reality part's really good. And so that's, you know, and one of my teammates is like, what's your dream? I'm like, my dream is to have a business team that operates 100% from objective reality, where we can, you know, basically own our results, not beat ourselves up, just go, you know what? I didn't deliver there. However, man, this is what I'm going to do different moving forward. And we can just have these conversations where I can coach people and they don't get offense. You know, they don't take offense. They don't feel like I'm coming after them. Like, we can have accountability and all that cool stuff. And so that's really what the book is about, is, you know, the whole first pillar is get out of your own way. And what is that? That is, these are things that I have, things happen. I have an habitual thought, feeling, action, result, and it's Groundhog Day all over again. And then the whole second pillar of the book is, okay, once you recognize, hey, this is actually how I screw myself over. Right. This is how I get in my own way. How do I shift? So the whole second pillar is all about shifting and not going down that rabbit hole again. So that could be judgment, that could be delusion, that could be whatever. Just shifting the thought, and then, you know, whatever. I hit you with a lot of stuff there, but it's about shifting.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. Thanks, Chris. So how can people get in touch with you?
Website's chrisfelton.me, And it's the book, Keynote Speaking Workshops. Also have my free 4-day training to level up on there, so people can opt into that.
Nice.
And just here to help, man, make an impact.
Cool. Are there any other thoughts you'd like to leave us with before we wind this up?
You know, every time I coach people, you know, especially if you got goals and you just kind of, chill the freak out, right? just relax. And, I was at a week-long seminar, we were just shifting, we're coming out of our stuff, and I'm a big Bob Proctor fan. And I think Proctor was, I think he was like, it's like in his mid-70s, and he's just like, I'm going to tee it up. And he's just, he's just talking about what he's going to do. And, he's got that voice of God thing going on. And, my vision had been stretched, and I was just, I was stressed, because I'm like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to put it all together? How am I going to do that? And he said, I'm going to tee it up for the next 10 years of my life, but I'm going to do it in a relaxed, calm manner. And he said, I'm going to have calm urgency. And I could feel the stress just leave my body. And then that combined with, I'm a big Mike Dooley fan too. He was the speaker before. And he's just like, yeah, man, like, don't get caught up in the cursed who's and the cursed hows. He said, pick the least suckiest path and move forward. Course correct. Right. Clarity only happens from forward movement. And so I was just like, all right, man, this is what we want. We're going to pick the path. Stress is optional. Overwhelm is optional. Overwhelm is a choice. I'm going to do it in a relaxed, calm manner. And I'm going to enjoy the journey, because there's no happy ending to an unhappy journey. And it's been a pretty good formula. And you and I are on the same page about small steps compounding over time is powerful. It's a game changer. And everyone thinks they have to change 25 things on January 1st. And it doesn't work. So,
no, it never works, right? There's no happy ending to an unhappy journey. Chill out, relax, tranquilo, right? Nice. So, thanks, Chris. Everybody, Chris Felton. Thank you, Chris, for being here. Really appreciate it. And thanks, everybody, for listening to the Focus Forward Business Podcast.
Thank you for listening.